In addition to serving as our Bible teacher every day, Chuck Swindoll has held several other roles. For example, he's the senior pastor of a local church in Frisco, Texas. He's the author of dozens of books. And he's also chancellor of a world-renowned seminary. Today on Insight for Living, we have the privilege of hearing Chuck speak in this latter capacity as he addresses a receptive audience of men and women at Dallas Theological Seminary. Given this opportunity, Chuck reminded these future servants to follow Paul's admonition to Timothy. Chuck titled his message, Accurately Handling the Word.
We are about accuracy. We're about a lot of things, but we are really strong on accuracy. Living an accurate life, communicating accurate information, presenting the information accurately in a way that people can get it. And the training for that is invaluable. It's just invaluable. We've all witnessed dear individuals who are very sincere, but they've not had the training, and you see them struggle to say what they're trying to say or wanting to say, but not having had the training, it just doesn't come across. It doesn't come through clearly. So here at the school, you will learn to think in ways you've not thought before. You will learn a system of interpretation you've not been taught before. It is deliberate, it's carefully thought through, and it's pretty consistent over the years. It's been carefully honed. The reason all of this is important is that people trust us. As a minister of the gospel, we're to be trustworthy. My wife is going through spinal challenges these days. And we have talked often, she and I have, about the value of trusting her physician. The reason is when he does his work, she's asleep. And I'm not in there, which is a good thing. And we are therefore at the mercy of his training and his integrity and the ability of his mind to work with his fingers and to do in that delicate part of her body what no one else can do but a neurosurgeon. A physician who doesn't do his work well is guilty of malpractice. An attorney who does not do his work or her work well does illegal work and should be arrested, should be reported. Financial individual who does that kind of work can commit fraud, and we read of it from time to time, because they weren't trustworthy. A minister of the gospel must be trustworthy. I read Steve Arterburn's book called Toxic Faith some time ago, and if you've not read it, you owe it to yourself. It's easy reading, it's good reading. Some of it will disturb you. And the reason I was interested in it is because often we will have people come to visit who have been exposed to toxic religion. And they are suffering the consequences of it. They trusted people in ministry who were not trustworthy. They followed the leadership of those who shouldn't have been followed. And they are now suffering because of it. Unlearning things is often harder than learning brand new truth. Anyway, he writes of this, and I want you to listen to this true story. My grandmother died in 1989. If there were ever a person of strong faith and conviction, it was Nanny. All alone, she reared her three children, including my mother, after the suicide of my grandfather. She never gave up, never stopped believing, never lost her faith. For her, death was merely a step into a better place. At Nanny's funeral, the minister told of one of the frustrations my grandmother had to endure. An audit by the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, went to a lot of expense and trouble to make sure that someone who made every bit of $8,000 a year paid her fair share of income taxes. While others were hiding millions of dollars from the federal government, special agents were hard at work on the case of Pearl Russell, making sure the country would not be shorted a few hundred dollars by a sweet old lady who lived her life in Athens, Texas. At issue was Nanny's large deduction for charitable contributions. The government could not believe that a woman making so little could give 40% to the church and Christian ministries and still have enough money left over to pay her bills. The IRS finally backed off when she dug out of the attic all the canceled checks to television ministers, radio preachers, and her local church. Agents did not understand it, but they were convinced that she had given every penny she had deducted. Arterburn continues. My grandmother not only gave away almost half of her income, she paid off her car loans early, paid off her house mortgage, and still had enough left over to bake her special pies for hurting people. Nanny was an amazing woman of faith. It seemed that no matter how much she gave away, she still was provided with enough to live fairly comfortably. What little she could do for God, she did. She did it because of a real faith in God, not a faith motivated by the idea that if she gave, she would become rich. She knew she would never have a lot of money. Neither did she give because she hoped to buy her way to heaven. She had taken care of her place in eternity years ago. No, she gave because she wanted to give back to God a portion of all he had given her. Her pure motives set a great example for all who had the privilege to know her and watch her live her life. There was nothing toxic about Nanny's faith. She never gave to a particular minister, but always to the ministry, such as to a children's home or to a project to feed the homeless. When she gave a dollar, she knew how that minister was going to spend it. At least she thought she did. Some of the individuals to whom she gave her money were not so admirable. Their toxic faith robbed my grandmother of the great blessing of knowing her money had been used to further the kingdom of our God. They took her money and spent it on themselves, their big plans and schemes that had nothing to do with my grandmother's desire to tell the world about God's love or to feed and clothe the orphans. Some of those ministers she so faithfully supported wound up in jail or divorced their spouses, or were arrested for indecent exposure, or fell into other public sins. They proclaimed a faith on television or over the radio, but they lived something else. They didn't shrink from asking my grandmother and others like her to to sacrifice their food money so they could buy jet fuel to fly to Palm Springs for a weekend getaway. What they did was dishonest, unfair, and very human. The kind of faith they lived looked radically different from the one they proclaimed on the public airwaves. These unfaithful men and women who spent Nanny's money put more faith in themselves than they did in God. They relied more on their manipulations than on God's provisions. They were more concerned about their own comforts than they were for the people who gave them money or for those whom the donations were intended to help. They were building big empires for themselves while my grandmother turned off her heater at night so she might be able to save a few dollars and therefore give more. Their faith was toxic. It poisoned many who had trusted them, and it distorted the view of God held by many who watched as these ministers in the media fell from grace. As a result, many today believe all ministers are charlatans, and they're out only to fleece the flock. These cynics have derived a toxic, unhealthy view of faith from the toxic examples they saw in the media. Unfortunately, media ministers are not the only ones who poison faith. That's a long story, I realize. I normally don't use something that lengthy, but I wanted to drive that point home. Who knows how God will use any one of you in some significant way, and I will assure you, with a Bible that you're able to teach with a fair amount of clarity and ability and personality, you'll convince people that you're dealing in the truth and they'll trust you. They'll really, like I trust our neurosurgeon. I don't sit in the waiting room worrying over whether he was well-trained or knows what he's doing. I trust him when he gets that scalpel or makes that decision on the spine of the woman that means more to me than anyone on this planet. I trust him. I've looked carefully into his training. I've talked with him somewhat at length about his method of practicing medicine. It's always bothered me a little that it's practicing medicine. But he and I have laughed about that word. But it is that. He's only human. And with as he put it, when he goes through her neck, he works between the esophagus and the carotid artery. And he said, that's the easy surgery. The difficult one is when he goes in through the back of the neck, through the muscles that will later give her intense pain in recovery to take care of what he thinks right now are some bone spurs where the nerves are hanging up and the pain is horrible. Every day, people will come, and those who are not jaded, who have not been turned off by those kind of ministers I just read about, you can call them ministers, they will come and they will believe you. Hear me, please hear me. They will trust what you say. They don't know Greek. They don't know Hebrew. It's a powerful thing to learn those languages. We teach them here, as well as any school I'm aware of, among the seminaries. And some of you will be very gifted linguistically in those languages, and you can manipulate with that. I know I've sat in congregations where that was done. And then I came to seminary and learned a little of the languages. And when I went back to the pastor that we had sat under and pointed out that what he had presented was not what the Greek taught, he looked at me over the top of his glasses and said, "Don't you ever question me, a Dallas graduate." So it isn't limited to the weirdos out there. It isn't limited to the ones that, you know, anybody, if you've got a brain cell working, you can tell that guy's off the wall. He can't be trusted. But some don't even have the discernment to know that. So, when you sit in the classroom here and when you pay your hard-earned money and you give your time and you sacrifice, all of that's part of it, by the way. It's designed to be difficult because ministry is difficult. It's rewarding. It's magnificent. No other work I could do and ever be satisfied in. But it is a constant, demanding work. And people won't let up. Harshest things I've ever read have been written to me, signed "In Christian Love." I know a little of what I'm talking about. Now then, all that was introductory. Second Timothy chapter 2. I'm intrigued by verses 15 to 19. As a matter of fact, I've written something in the margin alongside verse 15 that appears nowhere else in my Bible. It reads, "My life verse." I'm not big on life verses. I don't have favorite hymns. That to me is like saying, "This is my favorite child." I don't have favorite verses. However, when I read 2 Timothy 2:15, I wrote that. In fact, I wrote it and read, "This is what I want to be true in my life. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed, accurately handling the word of truth." How's that for a verse? That's good enough to go on my granite stone. And it's one I want to suggest for you to give serious thought to. Now we're going to get serious. Paul's in the dungeon. He's only got a little bit of time left. I often remind myself when I get into 2 Timothy, this is dungeon talk. I've never spent a night in a dungeon, but I've been to the Mamertine prison where, if it is the same one, it was a terrible place in Rome. It was cold and it was dark and it was, every day was treacherous. He's got Timothy by the collar, pulled up close, and he's saying, "Get this straight. I'm soon going to be gone. You're on. Do it right." So, I'm not surprised that he starts out with "be diligent." Be diligent. Boy, if there's a profession in the world where you can be lazy, it's ministry. You can golf your way all the way through. And I'm not down on golf. I just think the holes are too little. So it isn't fair, and so if they were big, I'd be interested. But the little tiny holes, that's silly. Put a little tiny ball in a little tiny hole. No wonder everybody cusses it that plays golf. You be diligent, Timothy. First of all, be a good student of yourself. And as I say that, I remember the words of 1 Timothy 4, where it says, pay close attention to yourself. Toxic ministers have no self-awareness. They don't care. They're in it for the money or the glory or the whatever. You, Timothy, you be diligent to present yourself approved to God. Diligent workman. Stay at it. I don't care if you've been doing it for 50 years. Stay at the study. Do your own work. Don't get your sermon off the internet. That's sloppy theology. That's lazy preaching. You dig it out. You build a library. You go to the hard work of preparing it so that your messages are original. And no one can say, yeah, that's a great message. I heard Charles Stanley do that 3 months ago, or David Jeremiah, those great guys. You don't need Stanley's or Jeremiah's messages. You need God's message. You be diligent to do that. You'll learn to be diligent when you study here. So the clear picture is, be a diligent workman. Make certain that you yourself are authentic, tried and true. And as you handle the word, handle it accurately. I love that. Accurately handling the word of truth. Now, what does it really mean? As best I can understand, it has in mind the idea of cutting something straight. It was used three different ways among the Greeks in the first century. If you drove your cart or chariot or whatever across a field, you went in a straight line. If you were a farmer and you were plowing, you plowed a straight furrow. If you were a stonemason and you're cutting a block of stone to fit into this wall that you're building, you cut it straight. That's the idea here. And you accurately handle the word when you cut a straight line, as best as you're able to do in the time you have between what God has written, what it meant to the people to whom he wrote it, and now what it means to us who live today. And I'm going to tell you something. You do that faithfully and regularly, people will love you for it. They are starving for it, and they don't get it. Most places. The late John Stott writes on it so well. Listen to his words. I love his stuff. We must daily soak ourselves in the scriptures. We must not just study as through a microscope the linguistic minutiae of a few verses, but take our telescope and scan the wide expanses of God's word, assimilating the grand themes. It is blessed, wrote Charles Spurgeon, to eat into the very soul of the Bible until at last you come to talk in scriptural language. And your spirit is flavored with the words of the Lord. Isn't that great writing? And your spirit is flavored with the words of the Lord, so that your blood is bibline. Isn't that great? Next time I'm at the doctor's and he wants to know what type blood, I'm going to say bibline. See what he says. So that your blood is bibline and the very essence of the Bible flows from you.
There's much more we need to hear from this message Chuck Swindoll shared with seminary students. He's talking about accurately handling the Word, and this is Insight for Living. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. Sticking to the truth of God's Word takes courage. Sometimes teaching the Bible requires we address unpopular topics. Well, Chuck presented a message on this subject that you'll find helpful. It's called This Is No Time for Wimps. You can surmise from the bold title the nature of this message. All to say, we believe you'll be encouraged to stand for the truth as you hear this compelling CD. A copy is yours for the asking when you follow the simple instructions at insight.org/offer. This offer is valid in the United States only. And again, the CD is titled, This Is No Time for Wimps. The CD and the many other resources available through Insight for Living are made possible because of the faithful support of our monthly companions. A monthly companion is someone who gives a donation every month in the amount of their choosing. Signing up is simple and efficient. The quickest way to give is by visiting us online at insight.org/monthly companion. Or if you prefer, call us. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888. And one of our ministry representatives will be happy to walk you through the process. If you're not in a position to become a monthly companion, we welcome your one-time donation as well. You can easily give by using the mobile app or give us a call. If you're listening in the United States, our number is 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. In closing, remember, we've created a number of alternative methods for hearing Chuck's Bible teaching. Insight for Living has a mobile app where the program is easily accessed. You can also find us on Facebook or YouTube. For all the details, go to insight.org/connect. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll talks about the critical importance of handling the Word of God with complete accuracy, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Accurately Handling the Word, was copyrighted in 2018 and 2019, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2019 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.